Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We do welcome in Doug Whaley for this hour. And why don't you text us any of your questions, thoughts, whatever. Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates reminds you to text responsibly. Doug didn't even ask. He doesn't even care. There's an empty chair there, and Doug doesn't.
I was going to ask on air. Where's Jimbo?
Jimbo, he worked on Sat. How about this? He gets wrangled into one post-game show a year, mm-hmm. and it's when the Steelers get their doors blown off against the Bengals.
So he's mentally beat up.
Well, here's the thing. He did Panther Hotline in the Paul Hackett days, so he had a lot of practice mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. games like that.
Oh, yes.
Yes, when people would call and say, you can't hack it. So he gets the day off today because he worked earlier. I just wondered if you were concerned about our man Jimbo.
I'm always concerned about saw the empty.
But you never know. He could come sprinting in because he's just frazzled doing something.
That's why I was waiting. Hold on.
Linda's got a day off too, so they're gonna have the day together.
Just wow, two of them. Holding hands, uh-huh. telling,
getting ready for the holidays.
Yes,
yeah, yep. That's it.
A little
maybe
Christmas cheer,
unwrapping a few presents.
There we are. Back to the Steelers before we get in trouble.
Yeah.
All right. Let's tackle this one first that we were talking about not long ago. Are Steeler fans spoiled? That was a topic of conversation that people have been texting in that we were talking about before we get into this team in particular. From a franchise standpoint, are Steeler fans spoiled? Because some people say, what do you guys want? You're in it every year. You got an opportunity. Well, have they really been in the past couple years?
They, when you look at, as Coach Thomas said, the total resume, absolutely. You got 6 Super Bowls. So they are spoiled. And what they have to understand is there's going to be some ebb and flows in this organization throughout the years. You cannot consistently... Well, I'd say you can't, but you look at New England, there for a while, every 2 years they were in the Super Bowl. But that's what they're striving for, and that's what we've instilled, or the Steelers have instilled in their fan base. Like, hey, the standard's the standard. We're not trying to get to the playoffs. We're looking to win championships. And when they don't, then you have to say, well, what's going on?
Well, yeah, and if you break it down, like we just dove into it, if you look at it, the last time the Steelers won a Super Bowl, if you were old enough to really watch and appreciate football then, you'd be 20 now. Like, yeah. There are adults. There are 18 and 19-year-olds that haven't had their own Super Bowl parade. Mm-hmm. And so I've said this all week. It reminds me a lot of when we were young in the late 80s, early 90s, and we hadn't had necessarily a Super Bowl to call our own that we could remember. And we the 80s were not good for the Steelers.
Nope. People forget that.
Yes. And so, especially with a whooping at the hands of the Bengals on the road, that reminded me of that 89 season in particular. And there was a time where, you know, people would look at you and be like, oh, you're a Steelers fan. And it was 4 Super Bowls. And you'd be like, yeah, but I didn't see any of that. So there are some fans who rightfully, I think, are like, what is going on? Like, where are we?
But you also... I'm speaking to those Steeler fans that have seen the Super Bowl, and most recently the last two.
Mm-hmm.
You have to understand, what you think the Steelers should be, they're not. The game has changed. The Steelers have changed.
All right, what do they think they are? Tell me
what are they?
What do they think they are, and what are they? Let's go. Here's the conversation.
The conversation, I've told you from day one that I was excited to see what the offense was going to be. Mm-hmm. So right now, I can't answer that question. Defensively, whatever they're doing that shows promise and spurts, they got to get consistent with that. And maybe it's injuries, but everybody's dealing with injuries. You cannot say injuries are the key factor. Then when you have places where you're going to be down, That's when you have to scheme. So it's a combination of player scheme and the whole thing of lack of consistency. That's where I have struggled with on the defense. And then you talked about it earlier today, and I was listening. It's that let me punch you in the mouth. And that's what all those Steelers greats from before were talking about. When I was here, you used to see those guys basically without fighting, getting in a fight on the sideline on defense saying, you made the play last time to win the game. I'm going to make it. So that was that competitive just disposition.
How do you motivate a grown-ass man, though? Like, that's the thing. You know, Ryan Clark is talking and saying crazy things that people should be embarrassed by. Rocky Blyer is saying things, just go out and do it. BMAC, Brian McFadden's on our show saying, but if you're 26 years old and you don't, I don't think people listen to contemporaries or listen to other grown men anymore.
That's when you got to come with self-pride. And that goes all the way back to the college recruiting and scouting, and then if you're signing him free agent, what is this guy all about? Does he have junkyard dog in him? Can he sit there and get punched in the mouth and instead of going back and saying, well, come up with an excuse, saying, you know what, he punched me in the mouth. I got to go out there and punch him in the mouth twice.
I think a good example of this is, and I talked earlier, and it's been talked about a couple times this week. I think Jeff Hathorn brought it up. Ryan Clark may have even mentioned it at one point. There are some guys who I think expect that by virtue of slipping on the black and gold jersey, a certain amount of that toughness, that ethos is going to slip on with the jersey. Now, I would cite Chase Claypool as one of those guys, but I saw Chase Claypool in college exhibit some of those qualities you just talked about. It's why they drafted him. It's why we were excited about him being drafted where he was. But it's almost like they get here and they expect it to just happen.
So, one thing I'll say about Chase Claypool and his music comment, I don't have an issue with it because guess what? They play music at practice. They've done it for years, and especially when they're away team and they're going to go into a hostile
noise,
environment.
Yeah.
They're going to have some type of noise. And that's where even young kids now, you go into high school, they're playing music in practice. I don't think that has anything to do with being tough or whatever. That's just comfortability factor of this is how I grew up in practice. So that's it.
See, but do you have a problem with the timing of it?
Well, he was asked a question. What can you do different?
No, right. Okay.
Right. And what they're doing now, and coach even said, we can't keep doing what we're doing. So why don't we change it up? Something as easy as that could, hey, it may help. It's not going to hurt.
All right. Well,
is it going to make them worse?
Then let me go here then. Okay. This is where, and I don't have a big problem with music at practice. I do think, though, an old school mentality is you earn loose. That is to say, you could earn that. You haven't won anything yet.
Correct.
Which means if you want it to be looser at practice, or if you want there to be a bit of a more, you want the reins pulled, or you want it to be loosened up a little bit, you got to show me something first that you're able to produce when it's not loose.
But so you're saying it's tight now, and this tightness has produced a drumming of 41.
No, I'm saying it should be more disciplined. If you can't fall in line discipline-wise and win while it's disciplined, why should we let you dictate things more as a player?
So, but this is where I'm not
I think
at
it's
practice.
A great discussion.
Yeah, I'm not at practice, but I'm struggling. Is it too tight now?
It's chicken or the egg.
Yeah,
That's the whole discussion,
Doug. What we're saying, is it disciplined now and we have to earn the right to be loose?
All I know is it's not getting results.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever is, and what I'm reading in between the lines is saying, hey, whatever we're doing, it's not working. Let's try something new. And it's not going to detract because we do it anyway, but it may give some guys another pep in their step to say, all right, let's go. You got to find a way. And that's where it comes down to. You have to say, no, I don't hate to say it. I'm putting it on. It comes down to the head man in charge. And there's a saying, either you're coaching it or allowing it. What is it?
If Mike Tomlin were to allow music then he's allowing it. Then he's losing. I think then he would see it as losing grasp of who's in charge of that facility.
I struggle with that because right now. Because
he said it yesterday. It ain't happening.
That's fine. But what I'm saying to him is, what is happening? I mean, you can talk about music. And then the point being here is music is just the precursor to say, what is wrong with this team?
Okay, when you were there, remember? If they would lose, they would take the pool table away, right?
Right.
That kind of stuff. The ping pong table.
Yes.
They would. Anytime there's a losing streak, you didn't hear the ping pong balls in the background anymore in the interviews. No. They take the games away.
And that's what I would like someone to ask. What are you doing different? I mean, he gives these broad strokes of people and scheme and all of this stuff. No, coach. How are you going to schedule this practice this week besides putting pads on to do something different to get a different result?
Well, and I'd also like to know, what are they doing to try and find their identity? They don't have an identity. They simply don't have one. Their identity, Doug, when they decided to let Ben come back for another year, their identity became Ben Roethlisberger. That became their identity because they were starting to set out down the path that I think we all recognized come last January 18th was the proper path. You need to get back to running the football, or at least have some level of commitment to running the football. Your defense can be great at times. We haven't seen it this year, but last year they were one of the best in the league. And we need to lean on defense and the run game. And when they brought Ben back, they essentially said, we'll get to that when we get to that. We drafted a first-round running back. Yeah, we got T.J. Watt, Cam Hayward, Minka, all that. But their identity became Ben. And when Ben is not good, and Ben has been in the bottom half, we can argue about whether he's the worst or just one of the worst quarterbacks in the league, as we have a little bit this week. When Ben's not good, that's your identity. You're not good.
I looked at it a different way.
Okay.
And I'm not in those conversations, but I'm assuming what I would have said is, Ben, if you come back, go back to when you first got here. That's how we are going to win. You are not good enough to put the team on your shoulders and go out there. And we've said it, throw for 350 and 4 touchdowns. We don't need you. We have that defense. We need you to run the rock, control this offense, and then make third down throws. Be 5-8 on third down. Be 9-9 in the fourth quarter. Make those timely throws like what we said Russell Wilson used to do back in the day. He'd throw for 180, but look at his third down conversions and his fourth down stats. They were unbelievable. That's what I assumed when they brought him back. That's what they were going to try to do. But with the offense not sputtering, the offense not being able to run the ball, leaving that defense out there, and then the injuries on the defense, it's just a cascade of just failure after failure after failure. So right now, like you said, I'd rather be back in the day. The thing, even though I am a Pitt fan, the one thing you knew about Penn State is they were going to do what they were going to do. Mm-hmm. And they weren't going to beat themselves, and you'd have to go out there and beat them. And that's where the Steelers have to get back to. Strip out all this motion, whatever. Let's say this is what we're all about, and if you're going to beat us, you're going to beat us, but we're not going to beat ourselves, and we're not going to go over and go out there and lay down.
It's like Najee said at one point on Sunday, I think it was, after the game, or maybe it was pregame. At a certain point, football is, we know what we're going to do. You know what we're going to do. We're just going to beat you at
it. We're bigger, stronger, faster, and meaner, and want it more. And right now, you can't say any of that about the Steelers.
Wednesdays with Whaley, we come back. We spend the whole hour with Doug.
It's another Wednesday with Whaley. Doug Whaley in studio with us for the entire 9 o'clock hour. You can call, you can text the Edgar Snyder & Associates fan text line, 412-928-9370. Edgar Snyder & Associates remind you to text responsibly. So let's start at this point. As we talk about crafting the identity of the Pittsburgh Steelers going into the future and what it looks like, how much of it is built around, if we're going to build around defense and a run game, okay, let's assume that's the path forward, even if the defense hasn't been impressive the last couple of weeks, how much of it is built around Minka Fitzpatrick on the back end? How far can they go? How far can they extend themselves? And I don't just mean term-wise. I mean money-wise. Can they make him the highest-paid safety? Should they make him the highest-paid safety in the game?
The way he's playing to this year, I would say no. But the problem you run into is when you're looking at a player and fans always like, oh, why is this player asking for this? It's all about looking at your contemporary saying, I'm better than him, and he's making this much. So I need to be making more than that.
And that being said, you go through some of the names at the top of the list as far as what guys are getting paid on an average annual value at safety. It's Kevin Byard, Eddie Jackson, Buda Baker, Justin Simmons are all $14, $15 million a year guys.
But then you look at Jamal Adams.
Yes.
That's 17.5.
Yes.
And then Minka Fitzpatrick and his team are going to say, oh, Well, let's look at as safety. The biggest thing you have to do as a safety is get your hands on the ball. Let's look at career interceptions for me, career interceptions for him. Yeah, he has some sacks, but he's a glorified linebacker, but you're paying him like a safety. I am better than him. So I need to get at least 17.5 or more than that to feel that I'm getting commiserate pay for my work.
So does Minka and his agent then own the leverage in this despite the way he's played this year?
I think so, yes. Because he can, as Coach Tomlin, look at the total body of work, look at his complete resume. He can use those words against the Steelers and say, look at my resume and look what I've brought to your team.
Breaking news.
Oh?
Kenny Pickett, ACC overall Player of the Year award and Offensive Player of the Year. So Offensive Player of the Year and Conference Player of the Year.
You know what else is interesting? And I didn't notice this. Interestingly enough, I caught my daughter voting. You know how you can vote vote on the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, like Dancing with the Stars.
I caught her on her phone yesterday.
Nice.
She's like, Who did you vote for the Heisman? I was like, honey, I'm not Pony. I don't have a Heisman vote. I just vote online like you. She's like, I voted for Kenny Pickett. And she's like, he has more votes than anyone. He's got like 40% of the vote on that online. Now, that doesn't mean anything really.
But
that counts for one vote out of the 900 or so Heisman votes. But it's interesting to me that there's some momentum there. Maybe it's just Pitt social media working it a little bit more than anybody else, but he's ahead of Matt Corral and whoever else is on that list.
And he's got a chance to be on a national stage at the ACC
Championship. That's true. He's in prime time on Saturday night.
He goes prime times and puts up 35 to 40 points. And the way he's been doing it lately, people that haven't really paid attention will be like, wait a minute, let me check this KP out guy.
Is there something to big-time players in big-time games? Okay, so I watched the Alabama-Auburn game the other day, right? And it felt like Saban was like, all right, my guys are just going to ride you out because we're going to end up making a play. Is that when you evaluate talent, is there a – because you'll find some baseball people say there's no such gene for clutch. Every situation is this
– yes.
Get into that for me.
Matthew Stafford.
Okay.
What – I mean – think about it. Everybody's like, oh, Matthew Stafford, he's this. Detroit never put a team around him. There were years when they got in the playoffs where their defense was pretty good. And he's showing now he is not a clutch player. He is not. Ryan Fitzpatrick, as much as everybody loves him, when you look at it, he's throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. He is a good player, but when it comes down to fourth quarter,
some people will fight you on this, that every situation is the same. I say, you know, the variables are different. If you're standing there and you need to make that throw to Santonio Holmes, that's a whole hell of a lot different than week 12 when the score's 21-7.
Some guys have that Clint Hurdleism, the slow heartbeat, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And talked about via scouting? Oh. And also, how can you go ahead and try to chart that out, what they're going to be in big moments? Just see what they are in big moments in college?
Yeah, that's just the eye test. There's no analytical numerical value you could put on that. It's just, does this guy have it? And a lot of times, you know as well as I do, if you have an athlete and they walk through that room and they may not say something, but you kind of feel their presence, that right there lets
Joe Burrow's last year at LSU.
Yeah.
The whole time he was carrying on in the way he was, he has it.
He has it. And then guess what? That feeds everybody else around him. And everybody's like, well, he's going to make that play, or he's going to put me in position to make it. So I have to do it. And that was the one thing about Brady. He would put the ball in places where you had to catch it. And if you weren't catching it, you were out
of there. I can't believe there are highly respected people in sports that will fight you on the fact that there's no such thing as clutch. Baseball's big for it.
Yeah.
It really is.
Well, there are people that believe
Reggie
in
Jackson
the numbers above
Dover.
All else.
I mean,
I'm with you.
My favorite,
it exists.
Yeah. My favorite basketball player is Big Shot Bob Horry. Robert Horry.
Mm-hmm.
He used to three-pointers all the time to win championships. Ray Allen, three-pointers to win games and championships. That's what I look for. I'd rather have a guy hit 200 during the season, but in October, I know what he's going to do when we need him the most.
Let me ask you one more concrete question about Kenny Pickett, because I saw somebody say this yesterday in the midst of a back-and-forth conversation on social media about Kenny Pickett, and I think Dane Brugler's mock draft had him going I want to say like 10th or something to Carolina or something like that. Would Kenny Pickett, let's say all avenues are available to go to any team that has a quarterback need in the draft, would he be better off leaving Pittsburgh and getting away from how the expectations around Kenny Pickett have been built differently here in the city of Pittsburgh than they will be anywhere else? Will too much? Let's paint the scenario that he somehow ends up with the Steelers. Will the expectations be heaped too heavily on him because he is not leaving Pittsburgh? He's staying in the city where he had success.
No, because when you start talking about first round picks, no matter what, that's enough pressure right there.
Right.
That's enough. And for me, I think the way he's handled it, coming back and knowing that pressure was on him, I could have left and been a fourth, fifth rounder, but started my clock to that second contract, and that's mm-hmm. when you really get paid. Or do I come back knowing that this whole year is going to be about me and I can put this team on my back? To me, I think that's great that he showed he can do it and he'll be able to handle that pressure.
All right, lots to get into coming up. I want to ask you a question. We had a big debate over something that you need to weigh in on. It's about Christmas candy. So we get into that and lots more about the Steelers. That's all straight ahead right here on the Fan Morning Show. Doug Whaley joining. We were talking Christmas candy. I saw this huge box of chocolates, right? What do you go for? That huge one, you know, with all mm-hmm. the little holes. And you get the, do you go coconut? Do you go cherry? Do you go peanut butter? What's your chocolate around it? Because there's always boxes of chocolate flying around this time of year.
My top is the chocolate with coconut. My next one is the nuts with the caramel.
Okay.
Yeah, those are the top
the
two.
The turtles, like?
Turtles.
Yes.
That's it. There you go.
Those are the bomb.
All right. How was your Thanksgiving, by the way? We didn't catch up with you there.
It was great. My brother just moved to a new place in San Pedro, which is Long Beach, and it was one of those where it's the first time we had all the family together since the virus.
Okay.
So it was just good.
And you're eating Thanksgiving dinner, and it's 59 degrees.
Yeah,
64
degrees. I golfed on Sunday, so it was great.
Man.
Everybody says the left coast. I don't know, man. That might be the right coast.
Well, I'll tell you, it is the greatest part, though, is at the very early part of the year, you can watch the NFL game. Like, you watch a Steeler game and then go play golf after.
Oh, yeah. That's what we did.
It's great.
Yes.
The game's on 10 o'clock in the morning. It's masterful.
Brunch and football, and then golfed, and then after golf, watch the night game.
That part I am jealous about, the West Coast, that everything's done by like 11, by 9 o'clock.
Yeah, you can still have a life.
Well, speaking of direction, okay, that's left, this is right. What's the direction of the Pittsburgh Steelers? And who decides it? Because we went back and forth with this morning. I think it's incumbent upon Kevin Colbert, if he does come back, to say, here's our identity. I'm tired of trying to fit things into our identity. Our identity is this. We're drafting for it. We're becoming this. And I'm going to live or die on this hill. We're either going to be a run-heavy team. We're going to be built on defense. We're going to get a new quarterback and try to get out and boot and roll pockets some. Like, doesn't somebody have to take Art the second, maybe. Doesn't somebody have to take charge and say, we're this and we're building toward it in this offseason?
No doubt about it. It starts with the triumvirate at the top. It starts with Art, one, and then Coach and Kevin, two. They have to get in the room and say, what are we now? Where do we want to be, and how are we going to go about getting there? So have that internal debate, but that external unity. But they have to come up with a plan, and like you said, a identity.
But to go back to what we mentioned earlier, it seemed to me like Kevin was kind of starting to forge that a little bit or search for it a little bit in drafting Rudolph several years ago. But then they never got around really to remaking the offensive line. So now they're left with an offensive line that has to learn on the fly. And they've always been good at building skill positions, especially at wide receiver. They build up the defense. We talked 8, 9, 10 first round draft picks at one point on the same defense. They were building towards that. We're going to be all about defense and running the football again. But then it seemingly hit the roadblock of the decision to bring Ben back, and that's what makes me wonder. Like, when I tried to read the tea leaves and try to read between the lines of how that decision went, I see a head coach who doesn't want to deal with a young quarterback. He's vocalized that this year, right?
Yes.
I see a GM, though, that was starting to kind of build towards a new path. And then I see an owner who just wants to live on the legend, I think, of the existing Hall of Fame quarterback. And I can kind of see how that decision was sussed out between the three of them.
Yeah, because you have an owner that said, oh, this guy took us to three Super Bowls, won two of them. Guess what? Our enterprise valuation of the Steelers went way up in that period.
Mm-hmm.
So we owe him. I owe him. My family owes him. The city owes him a lot. Let's give him respect. A coach, like we're saying, that wants is comfortable. He's had a plan at quarterback since the day he stepped into the job. So he's not saying, oh, I want to regress and go back to a young guy and try to develop him. But then you have the GM and Kevin Colbert saying, my job is to an eye on the present, but plan for the future. And I want to plan for the future, and bringing Ben back isn't planning for the future. So there's those three have to, well, we know who won out, if that's the case.
Right.
I'm not saying it is. If they, those two won out. But now it's going to be incumbent on Kevin and his staff. Right now, I would be going into the owner, to Art, to Tomlin, and saying, hey, here are the quarterbacks that may flush out in free agency. Here are the ones we could trade, and here are the ones in the draft.
Well, if they don't then build around Najee Harris and make it run heavy, though, I think it's a failure why they even took the guy. You know, I hate to say it like that, but why take him if you're not going to make him a centerpiece?
I agree with you. Well, I totally agree.
And to that end, are there guys out there and available that are not – like, let's do away with the Rodgers and the Russell Wilson, and even some people have mentioned Deshaun Watson. Let's throw all those names out the window for various reasons, okay? And let's talk about the, as we've mentioned before, the Bridgewaters, the Daltons,
Mariota,
the Trubiskys, the Mariotas, the Garoppolos, who could be had in for a trade. Can they, with a quarterback like that, if they properly build around the running game and the defense, how much does it accelerate, or maybe even does it slow down the timeline? How does it affect the timeline on rebuilding if you decide to go that route rather than drafting someone?
I think it accelerates because you have competent play at the quarterback, but then that's when you got to focus that attention to the offensive line, like Colin keeps saying. But for me, and I was screaming this from day one, the depth, especially on the defense, is lacking, and we're seeing that. So all those fourth, fifth, sixth sounds, every once in a while you're trading them away, that starts to erode at your depth. So you have to start hitting on those. And we always remember, Pittsburgh used to always have some college free agents make the team and make contributions.
Right.
Where are we this year? So those are the type of things, as a GM, I'm starting to focus on my scouts and saying, all right, fellas, we have to. I know we traded away, but fourth round on, we have to really hit on these guys, and let's put a major push on these college free agents, because that's where we need to build. The first three rounds,
like
they've been doing
where well. Are the Ramon Fosters and Chris Hoke's of the world?
Exactly. That's what they need, and that would combat these all these injuries on the defense that now you're throwing these guys in. If you had that depth and guys that could come up and fulfill those shoes, it wouldn't be such a drop.
Like, we could look at what? Maybe one guy on the defense. Is your Trey Norwood, maybe?
Right.
Who's a guy who's a late-round draft pick or a street free agent, undrafted free agent, who has made anything out of that opportunity? It's a great
– And the punter, if you count punting as defense.
Sure. Let's count that.
But usually you're talking about two or three guys where we're not wondering. We're like, oh, yeah, that guy. Right off the bat, they rolled off your tongue like starters. So that's where you're starting to see – because, not to cut you off, but
– No, you're –
Where the Steelers are now didn't just start last week.
Well, that's the big thing.
Mm-hmm. But this has been manifesting for a while.
That's the damn problem, Doug. People pointed it out last season and said, overhaul now. Like, I'm not surprised by 5-5-1. Chris isn't surprised by 5-5-1. Neither are you.
No.
I don't know if it could have been eliminated or alleviated or circumnavigated by going a different direction than Ben, but the process could have begun.
Exactly.
That's the big point here.
Just tell me how you want it and when do you want it. And that's what...
Still might be 5-5-1, but you'd feel different about
different.
It.
You'd feel like you're getting somewhere rather than just spinning your wheels.
Exactly.
They are a hamster on a wheel right now.
No doubt.
And the wheel's breaking down.
And that's the point, is I don't know if the triumvirate didn't want to take the pain, but there's going to be some pain.
Mm-hmm.
To get to that pleasure, you have to. And there was pain before we got Ben.
Let's forget how they got Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah. So let's start it earlier. Why prolong it?
That's
where they have to get to.
As a lifelong football executive, just about lifelong football executive, I have a question about some of these college coaching hires, the two big ones we saw in the last week, and how they affect the entire football landscape, including the NFL, because it loops back on probably our most well-known conversation of the year, and it brings up a good question about money and how much NFL coaches may be in the future attracted to the college football landscape. That next. Doug Whaley in studio for the entire 9 o'clock hour every Wednesday here on the Fan Morning Show, including this final segment, our epic ending, presented by Xfinity. Check out the latest at Xfinity.com. So we have a little text chain that we keep in touch about what we're going to be talking about on Wednesday mornings. And I saw this headline. It jumped out to me because it kind of loops back on a conversation we had earlier this year, Doug, and it's from Pro Football Talk. It says simply, will college cash grabs lure NFL coaches? And the first line, interestingly enough, from Mike Florio, maybe Mike Tomlin shouldn't have said never say never, but never, regarding the possibility of coaching at Southern Cal or any other college program. It notes the money Brian Kelly and Lincoln Riley are both going to be making, which is big money, at LSU.
Not just the money
USC.
With Lincoln Riley. They're buying both houses.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving him
first
that stipend.
First of all, he has two houses
in Lincoln. Who wants two houses in Lincoln?
And any time use of the private jet.
Right.
Not like James Franklin gets it for recruiting trips. No. Lincoln Riley, he wants to go to Barbados for the weekend. No. Bang, private jet.
No, Lincoln Riley has spring football. The family wants to go to Barbados.
Yes.
Go ahead, family. Use the PJ.
Wow.
It blows me away how much money is in.
Well, that's what I was trying to say when I brought up. You have one owner, and Steelers, maybe they have four or five owners. You have a conglomerate of alumni that can give this coach whatever he wants and have access to a lot of things outside of football that will make that life so much easier to deal with. And you say recruiting, but all right, everybody was talking about, oh, he doesn't want to. Coaches don't want to deal with 18, 19-year-old recruits or players. Look what he's dealing with now. I'd rather deal with an 18, 19-year-old know that they have to come through me or another college to get to where they're going than a guy you just paid millions of dollars and be like, hey, I want music at practice, coach. What's going on?
All right,
you're dealing with the same things. And then now with recruiting, with social media, all they have to do is come in and it'd be a closer because colleges are now having a football side and a personnel side set up just like the pros. So they can do all the recruiting and stuff. All he'd have to walk in and be like, hey, mom, give me some of that peach pie or some of that ice cream and then close the deal. That's it.
I'm not letting you off the hook here at all. Okay. I'm making you answer this question truthfully because I dealt with him when he was at UC. You read all the stories and see about him. Is Brian Kelly a jerk, yes or no? Everything you read, he's a jerk. You dealt with him in a professional way. You went and you saw Tony Pike, right?
Yeah.
Zach Kolaris, I'm sure you scouted. And all those
guys.
Let me
say this. If you believe that a guy's a jerk if he feels everything's about him, then you're right. It's all about Brian Kelly.
Okay, continue.
It's not about the players. It's not about him. It's like, well, I put him in this situation. My system, my this and my that. Now, that's for me. Now, to work for him, that's a different story. I know Nick Saban. I love Nick Saban as a professional because – he said, a scout's never beat me. So the day of a game, I could go in there and watch film. So I always root for Nick Saban. Now, other guys like Brian Kelly are like, no, it's about me. It's not about the players. It's not about you. It's my program. You do it the way I want to. They do it the way I want it. And that's why we're succeeding.
I saw Brian Kelly. Did you scout Tony Pike?
Yeah.
I saw him talk to Tony Pike in a way I've never seen a coach talk to a player
scared me. We've all seen the film of the way he talks to people.
He just said that to that kid walking off the field. And I was within earshot. I saw it. And I couldn't believe that kid still wanted to go there and play. It was scary to me.
This is why I don't think the Brian Kelly of Central Michigan, of Cincinnati, of Notre Dame, the guy who made Robert Sala and Matt LaFleur park cars at his Christmas party as GAs. That guy's not going to fly in Baton Rouge the first four loss season they have. I'm sorry. Like, I know the people down there are not going to put up with that attitude from him. Like, who the hell is this Yankee coming down here?
This red-faced Yankee.
Yes.
Where's your bite?
He better win and win a whole lot real fast.
If not, he's walking away with
a lot of money.
But that's
money. He's retiring after that.
That's why, though, it pays to take a job like that. Because even if you fail and you just last 3 years, you made generational money even in failure.
Yes. You make lifetime money as in, everybody says, Thomas got a job for life. Now, some of these people are not saying that now, but they were saying it when I brought that up. But $110 million, I'm good with that. If I get fired after a while.
So here's
what I mean? That's a lifetime contract is what you're saying.
Here's the question to bring it back around to Florio's headline on Pro Football Talk. Are more NFL guys going to be attracted to that despite all the drawbacks that we've talked about? Mm-hmm. Are they going to be attracted to, if you scrounge up the money, sure, I'll come there.
Because it comes down to basic, what do people work for? They work to make money, and they work to be able to set their family up to have opportunities that they wouldn't have.
Right.
And if you can go somewhere, be it high school, if a high school says, I'll give you $110 million, there's going to be coaches being like, hey, you know what? That's not that bad.
There's places in Texas that would consider that.
I can check classes. I can be a PE guy. No, but that's what I'm saying. But you're still doing it in football. And in my opinion, because of the way college is set up now, it's just like the pros. The scout, I mean, the recruiting, every college has a scouting department. So they're going to go in there and do all the recruiting. You just got to come in and be close.
What do you make of the decision in Lincoln Riley's case to leave? He was going to be in the SEC, maybe even the SEC West, and head to the Pac-12. But then on the flip side, you have Brian Kelly, who you don't have to play in a conference championship game. All you got to do is get 11 wins, maybe 10 in some years, depending on how things stack up, and you're in the playoff conversation. Now you got to go down to the SEC West.
Well, in Lincoln Riley's, I think it's a brilliant move because now you get out of the SEC, you go into the downtrodden Pac-12, and with that fertile recruiting area, not only L.A., but Southern Cali.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can take USC, go national. You're going to be able to dominate the Pac-12 like Alabama has, if he's up to what he is.
He already took the quarterback he was going to have at Oklahoma, who's an L.A. kid.
So he's going to be fine. Yeah. In my opinion, reading between the lines, Brian Kelly knows that he cannot get the athletes to win the national championship at Notre Dame.
Plus he's 60. It's one last shot.
Yeah. I go to LSU. Those are the guys that can help you win a national championship. If Ed Ogeron won I'm a better coach than him. I can win multiple.
Haven't the last three coaches won there?
Yeah. No, who was before Miles?
Saban.
That's what he's looking at. He's a Nick Saban. Nick Saban went from the North, wasn't there. I can go down. And that's where he is. And that's why I tip my cap to Brian Kelly, because he's wanting the challenge. And he knows, just like the Rams moved on from Goff, that's not going to get us there. The people in Notre Dame, even if I'm recruiting, aren't going to get me my national championship. I have to go to LSU.
Plus, the sun shines 3 days a year in South Bend, Indiana.
Right.
one of the coldest places in the world when the wind blows.
It's touchdown Jesus away from being Gary, Indiana. Yes.
Right.
And then the culinary pursuits in Louisiana. I mean, come on.
There you go.
The first time Brian Kelly has to go into some recruit's house down south of I-10, down in the bayou, and suck a crawdad head off the...
Oh, pop it, suck it. Oh, yeah. I got that down. He better get it down.
He better figure it out real quick.
Great stuff. He'll be a lot redder than he is now.
Great stuff this week, Doug, as always. Doug Whaley in studio for the entire 9 o'clock hour every Wednesday. Another Wednesday with Whaley. We'll do it again next week. Tomorrow on the Fan Morning Show, Gary Stokin, CEO of the Peach Bowl. What's he looking for in that ACC championship game on Saturday night? Jeff Hathorn will check in. Nick Kostos at 9 o'clock with all the plays you should have for this weekend's NFL action. Jeff Capel tomorrow morning scheduled to join us at 9:30.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.